Welcome to the Maine Reader on Maine Airs, the Maine Audio Information and Reading Service, a program of the IRIS Network, serving Maine's blind and visually impaired. My name is Cynthia Bowman, and I'm reading The Log of the Skipper's Wife, the diary of Dorothea Moulton Bellano, edited by her son, James W. Bellano. Our last episode took us away from Boston at last with a cargo of ice for Christmas in Rio. The ship sails west quite a bit in order then to catch trade winds to take it south. Although Dorothea was very, very eager to take to sea, sometimes while there she is bored with wash and ironing and reading among her few diversions. We read her entry for December 18th, 1911, just at the end of the episode as the ship pulled in to Rio's harbor, with forts firing salutes and many, many Brazilians lining the dock. Let's continue. Wednesday, December 20th, 1911. Rollicking Rio. Sea fever will come slow and hard in this wondrous city. Even the several German men of war anchored in the glittering bay cannot detract from the beauty of the hilled, colorful, pink and white paradise. Guanabara, the name for the bay, is native Indian for breast of the sea. It availed little that they kept their minds above their belts, but then, according to the old photos, they wore no belts or anything else. Nor would I wear anything in this sultry climate if I could put up with a bit of rape. Clothes are against the spirit of the place. No wonder the Jesuit missionaries wrote that they could discover no virgin younger than 10 years of age. South of here, from Porto Alegre, happy port, down to Paraguay, the soldiers of the cross ran a theocratic dictatorship in the 1700s, not too different from that of the Puritans about Boston at the same time. Above here one sees the dedos de Deus, the fingers of God, rising to the heavens in mountainous peaks near Petropolis, where the emperor, Dom Pedro II, summered, and where every carioca worth his salt scoots annually for a summer chill. Yellow fever was then almost as epidemic in lovely Rio as now. We were told yesterday that several of the Norwegian barks and English steamers in the harbor have had as many as 2 whole crews shipped out from Europe to replace those who have died of the yellow jack. We're also told of the typical Brazilian, his brain and that of his passing cousin, hot with the torpid heat, who bumped into his cousin in one of the narrow sidewalks of the city and, after trying to remember who each other was, decided, with great effort, to make conversation as follows. "Oh, cousin, Aristo Demo, it is really you. And how is your beautiful mother, my beloved aunt, I think?" "Yes, your aunt. Actually, she is dead." A long pause, while Aristodemo's mind wrestles slowly with how to show grief, and his cousin copes with the rumor of bad news already fleeing from his consciousness. "Dead? Of what?" "Yellow fever, it might have been." Another pause for futile attempt to regain a foggy consciousness, then a valiant effort to carry on and finish the onerous conversation. "Yellow fever, aye, yellow, what a beautiful color." The Marie and the Hopkins are the only ships in the harbor flying the American flag, the peppermint candy rag, as the British call it, and both ships are from Maine. The white steam launches to Niterói. Across the bay scooters quick and thick as water bugs on a pond. The Mercado, where they disgorge multitudes of laughing, dancing, noisy cargoes of plump girls and musical boys with the ability to make a symphonic orchestra out of spoons, sticks, and rubber bands on matchboxes, is loaded with enormous avocados at a penny each, luscious pineapples, and juicy mangoes which wet your chin and stain your dress, but who cares? Just in from the lazy, smelly waterfront, the bay curves on both sides like a horseshoe, off south past Botafogo to the Sugarloaf, and north to Governor's Island and the sun-baked forts where soldiers siesta on duty. Captain Rodin, an ancient Breton pirate, now settled here and reputed to own the red light district, came on board for dinner and, says Fred, he brings a different wife each trip. It is surprising what excellent condition our ice cargo is in. The consignee, Senor Ferreira, is very pleased with it and stayed to take a pleasant launch ride with us during the cool, the less hot, of the evening, when the diamond necklace of lights along Botafogo Bay made it seem brilliantly impossible that there should be anything like yellow fever. We went outside, around the Sugarloaf and along the white beach of Copacabana, south to the Arpeador, the jutting rocks sticking out into the sea from where fish are speared as they surface to the night lights. Does the word Arpeador have anything to do with harpoon? Must look it up. If so, an arpeador is a harper, and Harper's Ferry is no longer to me anything but a place where some harpers settled, who probably knew never that in Old English, or was it Norman French, never knew their name derived from their occupation at harping. The English language is as much mixed up as was poor Aristodemo. Imagine the silliness of Washington in trying to teach Puerto Ricans English, at least trying to make English supplant the more simple but, of course, less rich language, Spanish. And this Portuguese, so whooshy and so full of carioca slang, jogo de bico, the numbers game where every carioca tries to guess the beast whose picture will appear at appointed places the next day, has become a commonplace expression for a foolish endeavor. Amigo da onza, friend of the beast, is used by all to mean an unreliable person. I love it. Oh, how I do love my carefree cariocas. They should care, for most are poor, but they don't. My lewd Fred says a Brazilian breakfast is nothing but a cigarette and a piss. Yet with my own eyes I've seen the harbor alive with fish for the catching. Shrimp can be caught along the shore with no more effort than that required to pick them up. The trees are drooping with fruit. I suppose it's sheer laziness. And how the delightful, humorous cariocas like to joke of that. I've heard the tale 20 times in these few days of the emperor asking reclining country Cabulco whether his land was good for farming. The man said the land was rich. A terra dá? Asked the emperor. Does the land give a good yield? Si, senor, replied the peasant. Plantado dá. If it's planted, it yields. Many cariocas, it is said, merely exist from one carnival to another, spending the year between in mirthful misery. That reminds me of the real world. We began to discharge cargo. The Italian stevedores, the cariocas won't work, so laborers have to be imported, with towels around their necks and sashes of red or yellow around their waists, sing out their curses with voices of opera stars. Captain Rodin for supper, and I was invited to tour the red light district, heavily veiled, he insisted, to see how happy and homelike are the whores, just honest, hard-working girls, he insisted. I suppose the hard-working part of it is true, their area of business being so close to sailors. In the evening we took a launch ride and visited the palace at Laranjeiras, where the emperor used to live. Cool buildings with many arches of white among the orange trees. Apparently Captain Rodin, the president of Brazil, are close friends. The company I keep may not be the best, but it is certainly enlightening. Thursday, December 21st, 1911. On shore, where we called on Dr. and Mrs. Shaw, old friends of Captain J.W. Their daughter Roxy is studying singing and has such a beautiful voice that she has been invited to Milan for further development at the opera. Lord knows she's fat enough to be a prima donna. They invited us to Christmas dinner. Mrs. Shaw was educated at the Swank Girls' School in Vevey, Switzerland. Not content with a little knowledge, she kicked over the conventional traces and went to the Sorbonne. What a joy to talk with someone who can read without moving her lips. She said that Captain J.W. would be very proud of me if we ever meet, because he had told her several times how much he missed having an education. Apparently he went away to sea when he was 12, without having gone beyond the 6th grade, but reads voraciously, as I've seen many sailors do. Caught one of the black crewmen cuddled in the lee of the forward house yesterday, puzzling over a thick volume of Shakespeare. It's a good thing Fred didn't see it. He might claim that the literate sailor was up to no good. Took the tram out to Leme. The delightful karaokes call their streetcars bondes. That's because the electric bond and share company financed the street railways, floating bonds. In typical wittiness, the karaokes assumed that each bond bought one car, so, naturally, each car is a bonde. The reasoning behind the idea has long been forgotten, but the name bonde sticks, just as in Puerto Rico a bus is a guagua, from the noise made by the air-filled rubber pump for the horn. We stopped for a demitasse of Rio coffee when we were waiting for the return bonde at Leme. Sugar is poured into the little white cup up to the brim, and the hot, syrupy coffee is slowly dropped into the sugar until the cup is full. Then, with one gulp, all is downed. If there's any delay and an impatient American asks how long it will take to get the goo, the answer is always the same and typically Brazilian. Está na máquina. It's in the works. Local businessmen find the café anzinho, the little coffee, an efficient way for terminating a conversation and getting rid of pests. They invite their visitor out to the corner coffee shop. Each corner has one. And when the visitor is speechless, with his throat afire, the businessman will slap his visitor on the back, say, "Até logo," so long, and disappear, while his visitor is helpless. Above Leme looms the Corcovado, the hunchback figure of natural mountain, up which one climbs for a view over the bay and the sea. The new boulevard, Parisian in design but Brazilian in maintenance, with many potholes already, is lined with beautiful palms. The bonde returned to the municipal theater stop, where I read of operas to come, and there met Mrs. Fales of Thomaston. Her husband once sailed as mate with Captain J.W. She will go to the opera with me, but I could tell that she looked upon it distastefully and might prefer a time at the South Thomaston Grange. Captain Fales and Fred met us for another caffenzino and sailed ships while I drank in the sounds of Rio and guzzled the delights of the brilliant colors of parrots on the shoulders of shouting hawkers. Did hawkers once sell birds? Who were exhorting each karaoke to add the noise of the birds to the already deafening pandemonium of the typical karaoke home. Friday, December 22, 1911. The old steward won 1,000 mil-reis, about $400, in the lottery and is scouring Brazil for real German beer. Fred says not to expect any fudge or clean bedsheets for weeks unless I get to work myself. Went ashore for photos and visited the waterfront market, which goes on for several blocks. Melons brought in the sloops, goletas from along the coast, sell for less than a dollar. Watched a big Norwegian bark being towed in among the constantly scooting ferry boats. walked or sauntered along the market, and saw such things as I couldn't believe: oysters picked from shoreside trees, shrimp as long as small lobsters, pineapples hollowed out to be filled with large and luscious strawberries. Reminds me of Fred's tale about the Maine boy, home from the sea, who told his old grandmother that he had seen fish that fly, and she said, "Now, son, I'll believe you seen rivers of silver, Rio de la Plata, and coasts of gold, Rio d'Oro, but flying fish, don't tell your poor old granny there's fish that fly." A launch ride during the cool of the evening with the Fales and their son Otis, based in Rio with Otis Elevator, and uplifting the Brazilians, he says, out around the Sugarloaf and along the Copacabana, which, Fred says, his father was offered at a low price 10 years ago, and now is worth that sum by 100 times. Fred says his father had refused the deal, saying he had no use for all that sand, and that it would ballast ships and wasn't good for anything else. Otis's friend Danny Danworth of Ellsworth, Danny Danforth of Ellsworth, and just out of the University of Maine, came along for the ride. He's down here drumming up business for Remington Rand, and intends to stay. Had with him a bell from the ancient English colony of Niterói, a poetess with whom I traded quotes all evening, much to the amazement and maybe consternation of the others. But she and I had a lovely time. We even sang the Barcarolle together in time with the roll of the launch in the swelling seas, just as it should be sung. Saturday, December 23rd, 1911. Dinner on shore, figs, yellow and luscious, served in thick whipped cream. A lovely beefy steak from the southern Rio Grande do Sul cattle ranches. Tasty yams, and the rice sprinkled with shredded manioc-like tapioca. The mail steamer comes Christmas Day, so we'll have a double joy. Took the Aguas tram with electric cogs up the Corcovado and marveled at the view below. There was Tijuca off to the right with its Anvil Mountain and the bar below, which stretches out into the sea and causes strong currents known as the Cemetery of the Americans, from the fact that unknowing bathers get too far out from the beach and never return. From the center view, there is Botafogo Bay to the left and Leme, and far left, the fingers of God rising up to cool, pleasant Petropolis. Rio is a city of red-tiled roofs, clinging clouds to filter the strong sun. I walked down through the lovely cool rainforest among large ferns, where lovers lingered amongst pink and purple orchids, and a solitary policeman turned his back when great advances were made. He smiled at me as though to say that he and I understood. I felt like a wood nymph above it all. Oh, Brazil, Brazil, how I do love you. I love you, but I'm watching you. You're tricky like champagne, but oh, so warming and so enticing. The good old USA shall always come first, but you, my Brazil, have my heart, to say nothing of my stomach. You'll be my second true love, at least till I get to France. Fickle am I? So too are you, I surmise. Then walked through old Lanjeras to the beach, and waited while I dreamed of the delightful life of a beachcomber, before being jolted back to sensibilities by cries from Fred, something about, "Where the hell have you been, and what in hell do you think you're doing?" and, "I brought these flowers for you, and now they're all wilted and not worth a piss-hole in the snow." Reality. Sunday, December 24th, 1911. Market after church, Fred follows his father's showmanship of attending Catholic Church to be seen there by the consignees of the cargo, who are led to believe that these descendants of Puritans, dissenters, anti-papists and such, are true believers. Well, Paris was worth a mass to Henri IV. And next to Paris, I'll take the annual trips to Rio. Mass couldn't possibly hurt anyone, but I wonder if my ancestor, Elder Brewster, turned slightly in his Plymouth grave when I sprinkled holy water on my brow. After that we took Mrs. Amado for a ride in the launch. She's an old friend of Captain J.W. and runs the telephone company like Father Bell, whom she knew when he and Emperor Dom Pedro set up the first telephone company. It was from Niterói to Rio. More a toy of the Emperor's than a commercial success, it still is spoken of as the world's first. Like all of my dear Brazil, it was an unfinished symphony, but just as lovely as Schubert's. I do wish we had a gramophone on board. I need good music, and so to bed with Schubert's unfinished, finished, as I dropped off with thoughts of begging, borrowing, or pirating a record-playing machine. Dreamed I was on the Esterházy estate with Schubert. Sunday, December 24, 1911, Christmas Eve, in Rio de Janeiro. Market this a.m., giant avocados, big as volleyballs and ever so tasty, with vinegar and oil as we ate them, sitting on the quay with our feet dangling above the fruit-laden goletas, with their crews of all shades, from blueback black to café con leite. Flowers galore did Fred get me to make up for the scene of yesterday, which I'd forgotten was Schubert on my brain, but which elephantine Fred did not. Read Tennyson during the launch ride while Fred and Mrs. Amado flirted, much to my disgust, but a real relief at being left alone to read and dream and drink in the Rio, which is now part of me. Tennyson would have written of Rio as I feel it. Fred says it's all right so long as they pay the freight monies in pounds sterling, the only currency in the world, except for the Austrian Maria Theresa Thaler. That's hard and here to stay forever as the world's basic money. On board found the New York Times, delivered by steamer, and how odd to read of snow and ice when we smell mangoes, their turpentine odor, and hear the royal palms swishing in the trade winds. It can't be Christmas Eve. Next I'll refuse strawberries in December. As in Puerto Rico and other Iberian countries, the children here do not get presents at Christmas, but on Three Kings Day, El Día de los Tres Reyes Mágicos, when they put out straw and water the night before for the camels of the wise men, go to sleep and find their gifts in the morning, delivered by the wise men just as did the Christ child. Fred says it's because Santa Claus would find it hard sledding. Monday, December 25th, 1911. Merry Christmas, Rio au mieux. The best Christmas a heathen like me ever was allowed to enjoy. The young poetess from Niterói sailed over in her sloop to present me with copies of original papers of Tennyson, which were given to one of her family by the great man's relatives. I shall save them for when the doldrums catch us at sea. I shall write about them. I shall copy them and send a copy to the Boston Library and another copy to my alma mater. Bowdoin and the University of Maine shall get copies. Christmas dinner at Shaw's, with fresh asparagus soup, meats and vegetables for beginners, followed by lecon asado for fillers, and topped off with Christmas pudding, served all aflame in glowing brandy, which also made me glow. Drank a secret toast to my mother's efforts in this WCTU. There were toasts and champagne to all hands and the cook, with special bumpers for toasting Captain J.W. When a toast was made in English, it had to be translated into Portuguese, which required another glassful. Thanks to God, there were no French or Russian or Chinese about. The rest of the day, evening and night seem a bit vague to me. I do wonder why. Fred says I'm now such a sailor that all I need is a tattoo. Tuesday, December 26, 1911. Just what was needed for a hangover. Went through the Ferreras cold storage plant. It was loaded with barrels of grapes, peaches, nuts, beer, and meats. They have 7 ice-making machines, but have to import ice because the demand is so great. Before they had the plant, and in the times of the colony, runners and fast horses were sent to the distant mountain peaks for snow. Several sailing vessels and steamers arrived today. A beautiful Norwegian bark came in with ice from distant Norway, a week late for the best prices. Wednesday, December 27, 1911. Mutiny on board the Silva. Mrs. Morrill and her son were sent over to us while Captain Morrill of Portland got the affair under control. The baby is too cute for words. How I'd love to have one like Baby John. But Fred says we have a full complement of crew right now. Then he had the nerve to go on shore and pay off Houghton. To console myself, I ironed and got a backache. To further console me, Fred came back with an enormous bunch of grapes, dripping cool. 3 men sent to the hospital from the Silva. Captain Morrill quelled the mutiny single-handed. No wonder shipowners the world around seek out Maine skippers. Spent, or rather capitalized, the evening ashore. Drove along the lovely Avenida Rio Branco, past the exquisite gardens started by Dom Pedro, he with the chin of his Habsburg mother, large and jutting, and with her Habsburg mind also, small and preoccupied with gadgets and gardens. No wonder he lost his job. Saw the Ministry of War, the artillery barracks, and the railway bridge, which Dom Pedro deplored as costing over 2,000 mil reis. Couldn't be replaced for 10 times that. Had a heavenly supper of tornados and tamarind ice cream with Captain and Mrs. Fales, who spent much of the evening anticipating the coming alewife run at Warren. Glory be. That's all we have time for in this edition of the Maine Reader. We're reading The Log of the Skipper's Wife, the diary of Dorothea Moulton Bolano, edited by her son James W. Bolano. I'm Cynthia Bowman. Thank you for listening.